Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mr. President, you're driving us crazy.
With all this mess, the radio is the only thing that's really working good.
Stop spending!
Welcome to the dawn of a new unified Republican government.
They can run the okey-doke on you, bamboozle you.
We're not enemies, but friends.
So we finally have this God that's going to come down and help us all.
Now, Mark Reardon.
You just referred to Trump as a God.
Yeah.
On KMOX.
It's go time. It's go time time. It's go, no go, lock and load, love him and leave him, smoke him if you got him, see you when I see you, because it's time for Mark Reardon time.
Back up, you creep. Get away from me.
All right. Oh, man. Back from a couple of days on the deathbed and feel a lot better. I want to go into gory details. First of all, I feel like I've been off the whole month because I was on vacation and we've had baseball interruptions. We have a baseball game tomorrow. So this is like really a hard month for me. I'm working a whole lot. And I do feel a little guilty because, the bottom line is my daughter projectile vomited on me on Sunday afternoon, true story, and then I got sick on Monday and really, really felt bad yesterday, but we're back at it here this afternoon and moving forward. So we have a lot of stuff on the show as well. We're going to talk about the Cardinals season opener at Mets City Field tomorrow. I think everybody's ready for real baseball, so that's coming up a little later this afternoon. We'll chat with Kyle McClellan. We have Kaylee McEnany from the RNC on this afternoon. Also, I'm very curious about the whole situation with MoDOT picking up half of the Poplar Street Bridge and sliding it 9 feet south. Fascinated by that. We'll see if we can find out more from MoDOT this afternoon. And then one of the segments I think I'm most looking forward to is with my friend and former colleague, John Jagler. John is a state lawmaker up in the People's Republic of Wisconsin. He has a daughter who has Down syndrome, and you might remember her story if you listened to this show from a couple of years ago, because her name is Gracie, and she created these dog treats called Gracie's Doggy Delights. And it's just a great story. I mean, she's done this for a few years. It really took off. She's got orders from all over the country, and Charlie Sykes, who used to work with John and I, who is now most prominently featured on MSNBC, he was kind of the guy, and I think some people know this story, that led the Never Trump movement. So he talked about this situation with Ruth Marcus, who's also on MSNBC. And she wrote a column saying, "I would have aborted a fetus with Down syndrome. Women need that right." So Charlie wrote a response to her saying, "Hey, you should look at Gracie Jagler and what happened at her 21st birthday party and how much she's loved and how much she contributes to her family and to society and this great business that she has." So it's a great column, and I invited her dad to kind of share it this afternoon. You know, I've mentioned this before. I don't understand why it's so controversial on the left to emphasize life. And I was someone who was born before my mom and dad were married, 1965. I had a brother who had hydrocephalus, was born in the 1970s. If all of these things happened before Roe v. Wade, might not be here. Brother might not have been here. He passed away when he was 27 years old. But this is a real, if there's no other segment that you listen to this afternoon, 3:20, with my buddy John Jagler from Wisconsin, because I think it's important, and his daughter is a great, great story. All right, how about this last night? Unbelievable. I'm still not feeling very well. I was binge-watching Sneaky Pete on Amazon Prime all day yesterday, but of course, last night I had to listen to this.
And a puck over to the far side, down along the wing now from Shin. Spins it to the blue line. Petrangelo over to Shin. Into the middle to Tarasenko. Shoot! Score! Vladimir Tarasenko down the left side.
Woo!
Inside the far post on down.
That was a sweet goal. That tied the game.
They kick after it, and it's San Jose coming away with it, but great pressure by Sobotka. He wins it, Sabuk on the backhand to Tarasenko. He scores! Bring out the Zamboni! The Blues have won six in a row. Back in a playoff spot on an overtime game-winning goal from Vladimir Tarasenko.
Awesome. How much fun is this right now? When we thought this season was over, Chris Kerber, the voice of the Blues, with those outstanding calls with me this afternoon. Kerbs, how are you?
Who said it was over? Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, thanks, John Belushi. I appreciate that. But how much fun has this stretch been? And, you know, you see it on an everyday basis, and I watch these games and listen as much as I can, but there's a fun factor going on with this team right now that we haven't maybe seen all season.
Well, yeah, the fun factor is pretty much the confluence of probably a couple rivers here. And you know, that would be, you know, the pressure of, you know, one river is the pressure of potentially missing the playoffs. The second one would be, the expectations having dropped with the trade of Paul Stastny and a 7-game losing streak. So you put all that together, and what they're doing is kind of reignited a spark here. But the building's been electric. Ric Flair took off on his own, apparently. And it's really just been a lot of fun. And now you can start to feel sort of, I think, the fan base in the city starting to rally behind this push that the Blues have had. Now, they're still in a very tenuous spot. I mean, they can easily fall out of the playoffs as quickly as they are in it right now. But they're playing some good hockey and at least giving you a chance for some hope.
So I have a good buddy of mine who does radio in Columbia, Missouri, Mo Lewis. We went to high school together, started off at the 10-watt powerhouse that used to be KYMC in West County, not too far from where you live, out in Baldwin. And he is heading to Las Vegas tomorrow with his wife, and he's going to the game on Friday night, and he's the biggest Blues fan and is so pumped. Vegas Golden Knights, a great story. They're very good. The Blues coming in red hot. That's going to be an awesome game Friday night.
It is, and you know, it'll be the third time that the Blues have played Vegas. So they played them once in October. They played them once more recently here at Scottrade Center. Now, when they played them in October, the Blues put 50 shots on goal, and Vegas had to actually come from behind, and eventually did come from behind to win in overtime. The Blues beat them here on home ice. It's a real intriguing game on Friday because this is one where you're talking about a week and a half out from the playoffs starting, and it is possible that if the Blues get to the first wild card spot, which they are in at the moment, this is a preview for a first round playoff matchup. But there's some great energy, a great vibe around that Vegas team, and it's been a terrific first season in the National Hockey League for them. And you know, now the Blues, it's a really important game, a couple games this weekend, because you can't worry about a 6-game win streak. You just got to worry about the next 2 points ahead of you. The good news is no matter what happens in the other games, with Anaheim and Colorado playing and L.A. having – I don't think L.A. plays, but two of those three teams are playing, Mark. The Blues going into that game are still going to be in one of the two wild card spots, if not solidified where they are. So a lot of great scoreboard watching coming up, too.
All right, so, yeah, I was going to ask you to kind of dumb down the math for me this afternoon because I'm not very good at this, but you mentioned, obviously, this can slide in the other direction quickly if you lose a couple of games. But what, outside of just keeping this momentum going and winning, how does the math work out? Is that easily explainable?
It is fairly. I think there's a feeling, when people, the thing that makes the math challenging is head-to-head games. And here's what's coming up. You have Colorado that now basically the four teams that are competing for these wild card spots right now, while Dallas is hoping to climb back into the mix. But let's take Dallas out of it for a minute. Are St. Louis, Los Angeles, Anaheim, and Colorado. L.A. or Anaheim, one of those two teams is going to get the guaranteed third spot in the Pacific. So whichever team doesn't do that is the team that will be battling for the wild card spot, but you have to keep them in the mix. Colorado plays a head-to-head game against all three teams, St. Louis, Anaheim, and L.A. The Blues play, you know, obviously that head-to-head game with Colorado. Anaheim and L.A. play head-to-head. So there's four head-to-head games in the final six for the different clubs where, you know, one of these teams doesn't have a chance to get a full 2 points. So that seems to have the mathematicians thinking that it's around 97 points that it'll take to get in. I think 98 is a guarantee. I think 97 could still mean you need a tiebreaker. So the Blues have 91. I think if you're talking, if they go 3-6, they have a chance. I think 4-2 in their final six games gives them a gives them a real chance here last night was game seven. Three out of their final five games, I think, is where they need to be to give themselves a chance. Let me simplify it that way for you.
Well, that sounds realistic, but I'm kind of, there's no size to this whatsoever, but I'm one of those play the odds type of guy, and you think about six-game winning streak, and it's hard to string those together in any professional sport, so hope they can keep it. Every game's like a playoff game right now, isn't it?
Well, right. So, last night began a stretch of seven consecutive game sevens. Now, it's a little misleading because game sevens insinuate that they're all must win, and they're not. When you're looking at trying to get to 97 or 98 points, the Blues had to win essentially seven of their last 10 games. Well, the reality of it is they have won the first four of them. So that's good. That means 3-3 in your final six gives you a chance to that. I still think it's a 4-2 stretch somewhere in there. Now that gives you a little room to step on a banana peel here, but the reality of it is, I think if the Blues manage to go 4-2 in their last six, they're very much in control of their own destiny and have a very good chance of making the playoffs at that point in time.
Man, that was
head to head games.
It's fun right now, and that was awesome last night. Curbs have fun in Vegas and play number 13 on the roulette wheel. It's guaranteed money.
Guaranteed. Okay, you know what? Guaranteed. I'm going to do that just for you, and I'll let you know how it goes.
That's my birthday, April 13th. I like 13, so put a couple down there.
You got it.
All right. See you later. Chris Kerber with us this afternoon on KMOX. The Blues back in action Friday night in Las Vegas. You know what happens after you're out for a couple of days and you're sick? I actually hit a button that had nothing to do with my bumper music, Tom Petty, playing right now. I don't remember the last time I did that. I have no idea what's going on. Hey, we're joined by Kaylee McEnany from the RNC this afternoon. Her husband, newly married, is in the Cardinals system, just coming off spring training. Kaylee, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Mark. Great to join you.
Hey, how's your husband doing right now?
Oh, he's doing great. He had a great spring training. He just got back from Canada, so that was a fun exhibition series, and he is so excited for the season. It was a really great spring.
Well, we are hoping to see him up here at the big team at some point over the course of the season, so I'll keep my fingers crossed for that.
You and me both, and I'll come visit you.
So let's talk about a variety of issues. And, we were talking a little bit before I brought you on the air here. I was out 2 days, so I haven't had time to address some of these issues. Like the John Paul Stevens essay in the New York Times about repealing the Second Amendment. I think the president has made this clear, and you probably feel this way as well, that probably inadvertently and unintentionally gave Republicans, I don't want to use the word ammo because that's a little uncomfortable because we're talking about guns, but you know what I mean. That's not something that will ever happen.
Right. Well, this has always been the hidden agenda of the Democrats, and they'll tell you otherwise. I just had a Democrat tell me otherwise that he is for the Second Amendment. But nevertheless, they say that, but then they always tend to gravitate towards these extreme positions, be it socialized medicine. Only one Democrat supported that in 2013. Now 16 are co-sponsoring it with Bernie, or pro-life. They say they're willing to accept pro-life Democrats, and now they have a litmus test, according to the DNC. Now they want to abolish ICE after saying that they were for border security. So on guns, the next logical step is this. They want to take your guns. They want to take your constitutional rights. And it's a matter of time until this is mainstream Democratic policy.
Yeah, I've said this for years because I've had these, I'm sure you have plenty of conversations that are technically off the record or whatever. But I mean, deep down, and this doesn't go for all Democrats, but I think there's the Rosie O'Donnell crowd out there and the folks that they don't see any value whatsoever in handguns, in rifles, in shotguns. They'd like them all confiscated and all gone.
Absolutely. A lot of Democrats think that way, and you see very extreme Democrats, like you mentioned Nancy Pelosi. I'll add to that Elizabeth Warren. And, if the Democratic Party truly wants to distance themselves from this, come out. Where are the 2020 contenders on Twitter? Where's Kamala Harris? Where's Elizabeth Warren? Where is Nancy Pelosi saying, we are not for this. We support the Second Amendment. We just want reasonable change. They're not saying that because secretly, I guarantee you, they were cheering at this essay yesterday. So it's a matter of time until they get there in word. They certainly are almost there in action, whittling away at our Second Amendment right little by little.
On the other hand, is there potentially a lack of empathy for some of the things that have happened, in particular with Parkland, Florida, from Republicans? Because there's been a lot that has been written about the Parkland kids and what happened over the weekend with the March for Life. And there have been some attacks on those kids, which personally I would not support. And I think you have to go back and think about some of these high school students who literally saw their classmates blown away and riddled with bullets during that event a few weeks ago. So it's a tough time because I think people want solutions to these problems. There's emotion that gets involved. The emotion doesn't necessarily translate into good policy.
Right. Well, first, I would point out, you know, I commend these students for being activists. I can't imagine being a victim of something like this. And so many of them have stepped up and really, you know, made a platform and allowed themselves to speak during what would be a very difficult time, I would imagine. So, you know, I commend them really on both sides of the aisle. There have been activists on the other side as well. And I went to one of these March for Lives, for Our Lives, to see what it was all about. So, you know, I commend activism. But that being said, you know, look at this president. He has achieved so much on this issue, way more than President Obama or past predecessors. You know, he did sign into law the Fix NICS Act that will strengthen our background check systems, the Stop School Violence Act. He banned bump stocks via the agencies at his disposal. So he has made reasonable, common sense change that is in keeping with the Second Amendment. And I think any activist out there should be applauding him alongside me.
What is the strategy for the RNC moving forward with young voters? Because let me offer this example. So I have an 18-year-old and a 21-year-old, soon-to-be 21-year-old. Also got the 3-year-old, but that's a different story. But they're very, very active, very passionate right now. A lot of it relates to what happened at Parkland. Now, we know historically that younger people, and I think I saw the stat over the weekend when I was watching Meet the Press, if you're looking at 18 to 30-year-olds, it's like 19% of them vote. If they get motivated, if they get organized, and these are not Republicans, some of them might be, certainly, is that potentially big trouble for the Republican Party down the line?
I don't think so. You know, I understand that the millennial generation is very liberal. I've seen it. I've felt it among so many of my peers, especially in the younger age group. But so many of them, I think, are motivated by this president. As I mentioned, his common sense change on guns is something that our party needs to emphasize and really take credit for shepherding and leading that. That's far more than anything that President Obama did. But aside from that, I would argue that millennials really are going to vote based on the economy. You know, they have had really their first decade of life, if you're an older millennial, where you weren't able to find a job. You graduated with extraordinary debt, many times had to live in your parents' basement. And I know millennials are disparaged for that. They shouldn't be, because it was a rough time to come out of college during the Great Recession. And to emphasize just the booming economy, a Zogby poll had 50% approval rating among millennials for this president. So I think there's more support than you think, and it's chiefly because of the economy.
So how do you counter? Because here's what's going to happen when these first quarter GDP numbers come out, and they might not be quite as rosy as some people had projected, or the president talks about 4%. I think we're still away from 4%. But let me offer this example, because I'm a person, rare member of the media, that over the course of the Obama administration regularly covered the GDP numbers because they were so poor. And in some cases, we're teetering along another recession potentially. So if we're in the twos or the upper twos for one quarter in particular, that's a lot better number than we've seen over the 8 years of the Obama administration. Certainly, we're in a very vibrant economy right now. But I think you know that if those numbers aren't quite where the national press thinks they should be, they'll go in attack mode.
They will go in attack mode, and then we'll emphasize the facts. You know, the fact that in the fourth quarter, GDP was supposed to be about 2.5, 2.6. It was actually 2.9%. We learned that today. So, you know, edging on 3%, and that number is going to continue to go up. I mean, we've seen with tax cuts, the number of companies offering bonuses, creating jobs, bringing wealth from overseas, and then also the rescinding of regulations. That has just been a fire under this economy, and I don't foresee foresee that changing. You know, this president is continually, every day, rolling back more regulations, already talking about round two of tax cuts, and that's the kind of fuel that we need in the engine of this economy.
Any opinion on, I haven't had a chance to weigh in on this, and I think it's ridiculous, some of the reaction by the left, because when we do the census in 2020, there's going to be an answer on there. It seems like a pretty obvious question about whether or not you're a citizen. The left is apoplectic about this, Kaylee, right now, predictably.
They are, of course, and this is why this question is so important. And I would add, you know, it was part of the census all the way up until 1950, was also on the long-form census and a few years after that. The reason it's so important is because for the next 10 years, we will use this data for any number of reasons, and one of which is very important, is representation. How many congressmen, let's say, the state of California gets based on the number of citizens within the state. Well, after the last census, which didn't ask about citizens, they got five more representatives in Congress. Now, you should not be inflating your representation because of illegal immigrants who are appearing as citizens on a national census. This won't be used for punitive purposes. It won't be used by ICE, but it will be used to accurately allocate representation in this country so that a vote in California or a representative in California represents the same way and in the same number as one does in Iowa.
You know, it's one of those issues, and I think a lot of people listening right now probably have the same reaction. And I would argue that a lot of people who vote for Democrats on a regular basis don't understand why there's complaints about a simple question like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a simple question. And like Michelle Malkin said this morning, you know, we're the only country in the world that we can't ask who is within our borders. And if we do, we're lambasted as xenophobic and any other number of labels that the left will give you. But this is a simple question. I think it's one that if you polled the majority of the nation, they would be just fine with determining who is in our borders, who are citizens, who are not. And the Democrats are fearing this because if we all of a sudden find out we have, let's say, far more than 11 million illegal immigrants, you can start doing the math about how many benefits are going out to these groups of people, how many taxpayer dollars are being utilized to fund individuals who are not even citizens, and in most cases, taxpaying citizens of our country.
I, you know, outside of the census, I think that's an important question to ask no matter what, because we should have a handle on those numbers, and we don't.
Absolutely, we should have a handle on it. And that, again, is something that would be wildly popular in public polling. Most taxpayers want to see that money going to, you know, our students, our disabled individuals, our impoverished individuals. If it's going to go to anyone, it should go to U.S. citizens who are down and out. And it should go to funding our roads and bridges and any other number of projects that are important to us as a collective body. But it should not be funding illegal immigrants, most of whom are not paying taxes themselves.
All right, Kaylee, always great to have you on. I think we went a little long here, but that's what happens. Kaylee McEnany from the RNC, and I appreciate it. And, you know, go Cards, right?
Go Cardinals. That's right.
Kaylee McEnany with me this afternoon. I want to go back just before I get to a break here on the GDP numbers, because she illustrated and pointed out something very important. And I want you to do as a homework assignment, check out the Post-Dispatch tomorrow or STL Today or any other major publication on the GDP numbers. And I use the Post as an example because I actually looked when the GDP figures would come out for President Obama, and they were terrible. They'd bury them on the back pages, right? If you have good numbers like this, where will this be? Well, I'm pretty sure it's going to be buried in the back pages. But if you come out with bad numbers for the first quarter, less than stellar numbers, which likely might happen just because of the, you know, and I always joke about the fact that they always blame the winter, which the winter happens every year, but these numbers are likely to be better even in the first quarter than most of the Obama winters. So you have right now 2.98 annual rate in the fourth quarter, which is, that's a pretty good number. That exceeded, this is from the Wall Street Journal, that exceeded economists' expectations, was up from a previous estimate of 2.5 growth and a little slower than the third quarter's 3.2 growth and 3.1 in the second quarter. These are amazing numbers. Unbelievable economic numbers. We haven't seen them in a long time, not consistently like this. Will they get coverage? I'm guessing not. Anybody watch Roseanne last night? Dave Klein, did you watch Roseanne last night? I have it on the DVR. I didn't see it. A lot of people are buzzing about that. I'm sure the ratings were great. We got a local connection with John Goodman. And I heard Rush talk about this. Is Roseanne a Trump supporter in the show? In the show, she's a Trump supporter, and in real life? See, I got to watch this now. So I'm most curious. Usually reboots don't work very well. And we've seen this happen in movies and we've seen it happen on television as well. It just doesn't seem to work that second time around. But in this particular case with the cast they have, I have high hopes. So we'll have to see what that provides. I'll try to sneak it in tonight, but there's a lot going on right now. And we have baseball tomorrow. So I'm coming off a couple of days on my deathbed, not working Monday and Tuesday. And I get a bonus day tomorrow because of the game from New York City. Kyle McClellan's going to join us in the next hour, 3:30, with a preview. He's been down at spring training, and he's got a lot of thoughts on the pitching and the offense, which is looking pretty good. The offense certainly is. Then we have the roundtable on Friday. Jane is off. I know that's going to please many of you who do not like Jane Duker. So she's off on Friday. Maybe your opportunity to tune back into the roundtable. Scott Faughn will be here, Alderman Jack Coder. And I think we're missing one panelist, but we're going to book that up, I'm hoping, between now and then. So as I get back in here, trying to get back into the swing of things, my producer, Fred, was telling me that, you know...
How about old Fred Bottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
He said, have you heard what they're doing at the Poplar Street Bridge? I'm like, no, I really haven't. I haven't paid attention to that. They are, as it's described, picking up half of the bridge and sliding it 9 feet south. So what? How's that going to work? Michelle Forenes is a MoDOT engineer. She's with me this afternoon to maybe explain this to people who aren't very smart like me. Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm well.
So what? You're punking me, right? You're moving the bridge. This has got to be a joke.
No, actually, we are taking the eastbound Poplar Street Bridge, and we are sliding it 9 feet.
How do you do that?
Very carefully.
Yeah, no, Siri, can you walk me through this where I'd actually understand? You're an engineer. I'm a dumb guy that talks on the radio, but I'm most fascinated by this, and I think a lot of the listeners would be as well.
Sure. So actually, we are going to lift the existing bridge off the 6 piers that it currently sits on. So it's going to lift up about an inch, very minimally.
Now, with what are you lifting it? Just a bunch of strong guys out there putting it over their heads?
There's a big slide system in place on each of those piers.
Okay.
We're going to lift that bridge just about an inch. It sits in a track system, and it's going to slide in these tracks the 9 feet off of each of the 6 piers.
You hope it is.
So there's all sorts of stops in place. The bridge won't slide too far, but we're going to use hydraulic cylinders to push it out the 9 feet.
So when you talk about I'm not going to use the right name, but the little pylons that the bridge is attached, do you have to detach them obviously first? Do you have to cut through them, or how does that work?
So it's sitting on 6 piers, and that's what we're going to raise off of those.
Is it connected to those piers or not?
There's 26 locations where jacks will be placed to raise each of the girders and the bridge itself. So off of 26 points off of those 6 piers, and then it sits in that track system and will slide out.
Now, have you guys done stuff like this before, I'm guessing?
MoDOT has slid smaller bridges, more like the interchange bridges that you see over the interstates. This is quite unique. It is an existing bridge that we are sliding, and it's a major river bridge. So this bridge is just under a half mile long and weighs 20 million pounds. So quite a bit there to slide out.
So I'm guessing there's not a lot of room for error.
So there are tests of equipment, retests, checklists, meetings, reviews. You know, to get to this point has taken many years of design and reviews and planning. We will be monitoring very carefully. And if we believe there's a concern, we will stop, assess, and restart. So quite a bit to just get to this point has gone into the engineering to slide this bridge.
Yeah, I can imagine. So I'm guessing that there's a pretty good section of this that's going to be closed to traffic over the weekend.
So starting Friday night at 8 p.m., we will close eastbound I-64 at Jefferson. You will be detoured up to the Stan Musial Veterans Memorial Bridge. All of the ramps, so Pine Street and 6th Street, if you currently use those to go eastbound, those will also be closed over the weekend. Also, the northbound 55 ramp that goes to eastbound Poplar Street Bridge will be closed for the weekend. If you travel westbound Poplar Street Bridge, so going from Illinois, coming into Missouri, that will remain open this weekend. But we do strongly encourage you, please do not stop if you're headed westbound, don't stop and try and see anything. Keep moving.
Good luck with that. Good luck with that, right?
Keep moving. all of the activities are going to be from below, so you're not going to see anything from the westbound direction.
So maybe I should have asked this from the beginning, but why are you doing this? And it's my understanding that this is less expensive than perhaps rebuilding that section of bridge, right?
So there's three primary reasons for the work on the Poplar Street Bridge. It's heavily congested. The condition of the bridge, it was opened in 1967, so it needs some work. Anybody that is used to using that bridge knows that the old driving surface was very difficult to maintain. And safety reasons with the old ramp designs to and from Interstate 5544. This is the most cost-effective alternative.
Does Illinois chip in for any of this or not?
Yes.
Do they actually pay their bills?
Yes, they do.
Oh, wow. That'd be unique because I was just curious. All right, well, that's an interesting process, and good luck with keeping gapers from trying to get this on their iPhones over the weekend. Can I ask one more question? Are you, Michelle, are you personally responsible for this mess on I-44 right now?
Our team does have the I-44 work as well, from the Poplar Street Bridge out to Shrewsbury. So, yes, that is our team as well.
I'm not going to have any luck just complaining about the construction process, but I do want to offer one bit of advice or complaint. And I don't know if there's anything, and maybe somebody has never even told you about this, but I'm thinking there was a reason. So as I'm heading in today, and this has happened since the lane shifted, if I'm heading in eastbound on 44, right by Shrewsbury there is, because you had to take over some of the westbound lanes, and that's why everything's narrowed. There's this one area in that far leftbound lane where you bank so hard if you're going at a certain speed that it actually seemingly picks your car up from off the ground. Are you aware of that?
So that's why there are lower speeds in place.
Yeah, well, I guess that, of course. But it's still, I'm telling you, I know it's coming. And I think that people listening right now who've gone through there, because I'm not trying to make this about me, but if you're driving that left-hand lane, it's a little jarring, I think, even at lower speeds.
So that is where you cross over in those three lanes. You do go through that area where the drains and the grates are. But we have done what we can to lower the speeds as well as inform drivers of the uneven lanes. So please slow it down through that section. I know as you transition through that area, it is uneven.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just wanted to make, I figured you knew, but I wanted to make sure that my complaint was registered. Duly noted, right?
Thank you. Thank you.
Can we just pick up that stretch and move it by 9 feet, maybe?
Unfortunately, we can't slide that one. That one is a full replacement, so that's why you're crossed over onto the westbound lanes. That one fully comes out.
And that whole project's going to last, what, till about 2025?
The I-44 at the railroad near Shrewsbury goes to the end of the year. The Poplar Street Bridge, all five lanes will be, the new five lanes will be reopened by the end of this year.
You're never coming on and doing an interview with me again, are you?
Oh, anytime.
I'm just teasing you. Thanks, Michelle. I appreciate the update.
Thank you.
I'm Michelle Fornes with Modette this afternoon on KMOX. All right, so I was sitting around. I mentioned I was binge-watching Sneaky Pete with Giovanni Ribisi. Bryan Cranston's one of the creators of that show. If you haven't checked it out, it's on Amazon Prime. Really, really good. And the second season just got downloaded a couple of weeks ago. And here I was. I wasn't feeling well. I'm like, good opportunity to binge-watch Sneaky Pete. And I got through half the season yesterday. But I got a text about the middle part of the day, which piqued my interest, from a friend of mine. He said, I got an interesting story for you. So I couldn't wait, even though I wasn't feeling well, and I'm not going to identify who this person is, but I will tell you that he had a voicemail that was left on his phone that's very interesting. I'm going to play it for you here, and you got to kind of wait till the end. I don't want to tell you anything about it until we get to the end, because there's a bit of a payoff here, and it's still somewhat of a mystery. So this isn't, by the way, even someone who's involved in politics in any way, shape, or form, completely unrelated to that. So he listens to the voicemail on his phone. His voicemail does not have his name on it, so whoever left this message, you're going to find out who it is here, didn't know who they were calling. Here's what it sounded like.
Hey, Joe, it's Hector. Hey, I just spoke to Bobby, so he gave me a quick down and dirty on what happened.
All right, so we just bleeped the name of the guy because I didn't feel the need to get people's real names involved here. That's the only reason we bleeped that.
I was trying to find out more information from you to see if you had any... whether, you know, this guy is actually part of one of the teams that helped with the visit. Was he arrested? What base is he out of? Things like that. So,
all right, so let me stop right there just to walk people through it. So he's asking about something that might have happened on a base, and did this guy get arrested? He's trying to figure out what happened. And I don't even know what the incident is yet, but the payoff comes at the end here.
If you get any of that information, Joe, do me a favor and just email it to me so that way I have it. I may end up having a brief, Hoosier on it.
All right, there's the part that's interesting. Did you pick up on that? Here we go. I'm going to play it again.
Hoosier on it.
Hoosier? Who could Hoosier be? Well, you might find out here at the end. Listen.
I don't want him getting blindsided in case this makes the press and then we don't have our act together. So I'm calling you from one of our guys volunteering on Air Force 2. But
aha! Did you pick up on that? I'm calling you. Where is he calling from? Here we go one more time.
You know, we don't have our act together. So I'm calling you from one of our guys volunteering on Air Force 2. But I'll look for an email from you. I'll try you back later on. Thanks.
So what he said was Air Force 2. That's Mike Pence's plane. Hoosier is Mike Pence. Best we can determine, and I've sent this out to some really sharp minds in Washington. I don't even know if there's a story here or anything, but basically, to cull it down, that guy who left the message, this is what we have figured out. And I won't use his name in case, you know, some of this is fake news. And we don't want fake news getting out there, right? There's nothing.
You are fake news.
That's right. That's right. He is in charge of the vice presidential Secret Service detail, the guy who left that message, Hector. And he used to be in charge, I think, of President Obama's Secret Service detail. So whatever he's calling about, and here's another theory. Again, this is all guesswork at this point, detective work by the person who had the message left, me, and I got some people in Washington involved in case they knew something about it, but they haven't been able to turn up anything. So my friend has a 314 area code. He thinks what happened is the guy, the Secret Service guy, Hector, borrowed a phone from someone on Air Force 2, don't know who it was, and made the call. And he was maybe dialing a 317 area code because 317 is Indiana, where Hoosier is from, and picks up the phone and calls and leaves that message because my friend did not have his, you know, identification to say, hey, this is so-and-so. And he just picks up the phone and leaves the message. Now, it doesn't seem like it's anything salacious or really, scandalous. I don't know. That's as far as I know. Maybe someone's got some ideas on that. But I thought it was interesting. And I guess when he told me about this at first, I thought, man, wouldn't it be great if it was Stormy Daniels related or something along those lines? That would have made it even better. But I just thought I'd share that this afternoon, because how often does that happen, that someone leaves you a message from Air Force 2? Probably never. Might not ever happen again. It's a little frightening that it does happen if you think about it. Second hour of the show coming up.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.